ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Austin Rodriguez behind the glass. It is a Taco Tuesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. My baby, I am the inventor of Taco Tuesday. Stupid Joe saying the Killer Bees up next with Branham, Blank, and Bryant. No, he would know better than anybody that it's Austin Rodriguez in today. What a mistake. Are you on a live microphone yet?
He keeps turning me off. I keep turning it back on. I don't know what's going on. Austin, what are you doing to me?
I heard you like in an echo, like you were in an echo chamber.
I turned the mic on to do the What Up H-Town. I mean, Austin, after a couple of stellar days, what are we doing here?
You want to try again? You want to go for two?
No, I'm good. My voice is about to give out, so no, I'd rather not.
Maybe that was Austin's way of saying he doesn't like the What Up H-Town, which and no one agrees with that.
I was going to say, this is my way of saying I don't give a rat's ass. I'm doing it.
Yeah, but we can only hear you from a distance. It was like you were the very back of a cave. But a happy Tuesday to all of you. Astros won a baseball game yesterday. That is neat. Watching the Shin and seeing Ronel Blanco throw a no-hitter, that was really cool to see. If you didn't catch it, here was Todd Callis. Todd Callis is, of course, our friend because we pay him to be on the radio with us, so he's our friend because we pay him to be. But here was Todd Callis on the Shin. Final call of yet another Astros no-hitter.
You sure?
Maybe not. It was the 17th.
Todd Callis' mic was turned off at that point. Don't worry about that.
Todd, great job. Todd Callis on the call on the Shin, though. 17th no-hitter in team history for the Houston Astros. I found this number to be fascinating, Blankers. Since June 25th of 2022, I mean, that's been a little bit of time now, Major League Baseball, other Major League Baseball teams not named the Astros have thrown 4 no-hitters. The Astros have 5.
I saw that.
The Astros have more no-hitters since June 25, 2022 than the rest of Major League Baseball. It's incredible.
It is mind-boggling when you think about it. And then for all of the stands for Maldonado, now suddenly you got another catcher that can catch a no-hitter, and you've got yet another no-hitter to add to the list. I mean, 17 no-hitters in franchise history, and you think about how many teams that have been around longer that, you know, that aren't quite scratching that kind of number for the history of a franchise. It's pretty impressive. And what Blanco did last night was exactly what we were talking about. Like, I wasn't ready to write him off yet because I said, look, let's just see what happens coming out of spring. And you and I talked last year about the fact that his changeup was better than average, but he didn't want to use it. Mm-hmm. Boy, did he use it last night. I mean, effectively, and they just, I don't know if that's like the cheat code on the Blue Jays right now because that's a good offensive lineup, but they just struggled mightily with the off-speed, the changeup.
Yeah, I imagine the scouting report was fastball slider, and they probably knew that he had like a show-me change, but not like an actual changeup that could be a weapon. I'm really interested to see his next start and see how other teams adjust, but you have 3 pitches for Ronel Blanco now, and that's what you need from a starter. A starter needs 3 pitches more times than not. We've seen Ronel Blanco had that trouble last year, and we saw Christian Javier have that trouble last year. He's another guy we wanted to develop the change, and he threw the change, did Javier in his first start. Maybe not to the effectiveness of Ronel Blanco, but I thought that the pitch usage was very, very interesting because it was almost 33%, 33%, 33% with the fastball, the slider, the changeup. Great to see that. Yeah, we weren't writing Ronel Blanco off. We were just saying, let's not praise Dana Brown for like having this genius idea of turning Ronel Blanco into a starter. Maybe it's okay to give Dana Brown a little bit of praise now, though, after that start yesterday. He looked amazing. He looked really good. Anytime you throw a no-hitter, though, you look really, really good.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is you're going to get to a point at some point during the season when you're going to get Urquidy back, when you get Verlander back, and then after that, Garcia and hopefully Lance McCullers. As much as we know and we've identified now, people are obviously seeing the same things we're seeing, that the middle of the bullpen could be a huge issue. For how long really remains to be seen by how quickly you get back the rest of the starters, because if Blanco isn't one of your 5 that you decide to ride with once everybody's healthy or a lot of the guys are healthy, he's fully capable, as you've mentioned, of giving you multiple innings of kind of shutdown baseball. He's a guy that has better stuff than just about anybody else in the bullpen other than the 3 guys that are in the back. You have the ability to take some of these starters if they don't end up starting for you and strengthen the biggest weakness you have right now in your ball club. So at least that's encouraging if Dana chooses not to do anything else from, you know, between now and the trade deadline.
Yeah, it's a numbers game. You know, you're going to get starters back. You know, knock on wood, Verlander, knock on wood, Urquidy, knock on wood, Luis Garcia, knock on wood, Lance McCullers. Those are four big league arms. So that, just do the math, if everybody else stays healthy, which is unlikely. I mean, over a course of a Major League Baseball season, how many pitching staff stay healthy from opening day to the final, you know, pitch of the year? Not very many. It almost never happens. But you get four arms back, you can get rid of your worst four arms or arms that are injured. So that is good news. It's one of those, we'll answer it whenever you get to it, because, like, who should be in the starting rotation right now? Ronel Blanco, Jose Urquidy. Well, let's talk about it whenever Jose Urquidy's back, and let's see where Ronel Blanco's at. Because if Jose Urquidy was coming back today, I'm not bumping Ronel Blanco out of the starting rotation for Jose Urquidy after throwing a no-hitter. So it's kind of, we'll get to that whenever we get to that. 91 pitches after eight innings. First start of the year. The pitching coaches, Murphy and Miller, I can't remember where I read it. I want to say it was The Athletic, but I don't know 100%. They said they wanted to kind of limit him to 85, 90. Did you have any thought that they might take him out of the game going into the ninth?
I did not, because this isn't Dusty Baker. But I understood, like, if he was already teetering with 100 pitches, I think it might have been a different story. And I honestly, the first thing that I thought of, because he threw more pitches than I would have liked in the ninth after getting the first two outs, then walking Springer, and then kind of, you know, trying to get a little nitpicky on the corners early on with Guerrero. I was like, man, I don't want him to go too much further. And I really, the first thing that popped in my mind was maybe I give him an extra day off before I throw him back out there again, because this early in the season to throw that many pitches, I don't want him to, you know, we've seen this a lot with guys that throw no hitters. If they have to extend themselves further than they're used to, sometimes that takes a while to get back and recover from. I don't want that to happen this early in the season.
Yeah, it entered my mind. Like, it did enter my mind. 91 pitches after eight. I think you took an unfair shot at Dusty, though. I don't know. Why would Dusty Baker take him out of the ninth inning? I don't think that Dusty would. Dusty's like a player's manager that goes off vibes and doesn't really go off the analytics. I think Dusty would be more likely to leave him in the game than take him out.
I don't. I think he's been very protective of the younger guys, no matter what.
He's 30. Ronel Blanco's 30.
I know, but the lesser proven veteran type guys. I know he's 30, but I'm just saying, you know, it's the same way. He just has a different way of thinking sometimes. I think my personal opinion is I think he would have been more protective of saying, hey, it's a younger guy. We're not going to take any chances. But in the ninth, it's a different story. And again, he wasn't at over 100 pitches. It went a little longer than I would have liked, but at the same time, it wasn't like 130 pitches like the guy from the Mets that never was the same after he threw his no-hitter.
You talking about Santana?
Yep.
Johan, he was so dominant.
Oh, man, he was so good, and after the no-hitter, he was never the same.
I remember when Johan Santana and Ubaldo Jimenez, I can't remember the year, I'm dating myself, but they both got off to like the first half of the season that was just unbelievable. Okay, I don't know why I mentioned that. 713-780 ESPN, what did you think of the no-hitter yesterday from Ronel Blanco? There was the weird discord after this game and even up until today. Everybody was having the Yiner Diaz, Martin Maldonado 2023 mm-hmm. argument with the involvement of Dusty Baker. Why? And look, I mean, you mentioned Dusty. We talked about Dusty last week, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, he's part of Houston history in a good way, I think, in a good mm-hmm. way. Certainly some people have some, you know, they didn't love his handling of certain things a whole lot, and Yiner and Maldi was that conversation last year. Why are we having this argument in 2024, though? I don't really understand this. Maldonado's not even on the team anymore, and Dusty's no longer managing this team.
Because people have a hard time letting things go. Because thanks to social media, you always have a platform, so you can just air out your dirty laundry and your whatever it is that you – whatever axe you still have to grind – because of the fact that people somehow think that Dusty and or not playing Yiner enough would have somehow drastically altered the end result of last season. That is so far from the truth and realistic approach to what actually happened or could have happened. But at the same time, this is how people lash out. They react. They don't forget. They want to keep making sure people remember. And if they had a take that was on the side opposite of Dusty and for Maldonado, they're going to keep bringing the narrative back.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. Like, I'm just – it's – do I love the handling of Yiner Diaz last year? Absolutely not. I feel like Yiner should have been the everyday catcher. Am I going to sit here and cry over spilled milk? No, it's a new season. Looking at 2024, pumped up for Yiner. We'll get to Yiner a lot in a little bit, but I'm not going to have that fight and that argument. That was a fight and argument that's to me it's dated. It was a last year argument, and I was over it last year. I was over it last year by August. I'm certainly not having it again April 2024. I thought that was really weird. You get a no hitter, your first win of the season, and these people are still arguing about Yiner and Maldi.
Yeah, you should be celebrating what Blanco and Yiner did last night, what Yiner's done so far. But again, everybody already is ready to nitpick and attack Espada on everything that he has done so far too. So everybody is looking for some kind of axe to grind, and it's unfortunate because, like you and I talked about a week or so ago, like him, love him, where does he sit in Astros lore? He won you a World Series. You've made the point, and it's hard to argue that it's basically, I think, between him and Hinch, but he is the winningest, the best manager in the history of the Astros, right? That what he's done, putting the postseason success as well as what he's done when he was here, he's beloved. He's not, you know, he's always going to be remembered that way. Some people, that's hard to accept. They still want to just go for in attack mode. And I guess, you know, so be it. They're gonna use social media and they're gonna lash out on a night where everybody should have been celebrating, taking a deep breath and going, "Hey, Espada couldn't screw anything up last night, and neither could the middle of the bullpen." And oh, by the way, people that said our offense sucks, well, guess what? A double digit run total and five bombs, that might make you at least relax for a night.
I know you had some beef. It's not directly with this no hitter, maybe a little indirectly,
yep.
maybe some. Like fringe direct when it comes to this no hitter.
Yeah.
What was your beef?
So I'm going to preface this by doing what you do when you have an issue with a headline, and I'm going to say, look,
the sincerest form of flattery.
Yeah, no, perfect. I mean, and we can feed off of each other. That's what we're here to do as a team. And my big thing is, before I actually get more emotional about this than I have to, my big thing is, tell me if I'm wrong. But the problem that I have is that the Astros throw the first no hitter of the season. Okay, and normally that's a big deal. And normally last year it was Michael Lorenzen of the Phillies. It didn't happen until August. It was plastered all over the place. ESPN was celebrating it all over the place. I get it that the two women's games were a big deal last night. That's not my issue. My issue is that on the front page, you can't find the Astros no-hitter unless you scroll almost to the bottom of the first page in the far right-hand corner where it says, "In case you missed it, Blanco throws no hitter." It's not in the headlines. I get that can also be algorithm driven. But you can't tell me that Larry Lucchino's death at 78, the former CEO of the Red Sox, or the Rangers calling up a young prospect are going to be bigger stories on the front page that have more interest than the first no hitter of the major leagues. I get tired of the fact that, yes, it's the Houston Astros, but it's different. We've moved on. We've all turned the page. Evidently, we get thrown on the back page when the Astros do something that's of this magnitude. If it was just a win, so be it. But the fact that he threw a no-hitter, the fact that you can even couple it and say, and get a spot of his first win as manager, because that is a story. It's a neat story when they say who gets the lineup card and all that stuff. But the fact that even on the MLB page on ESPN, it was the third listed headline, and there was no video. It's mesmerizingly frustrating to me that if this was a major market team, I think it would have been plastered all over the place.
I like how you put that, mesmerizingly frustrating.
Yep.
I think you're being a little disrespectful to Larry Lucchino, first off.
Okay. I said it first for you.
A little disrespectful to Larry Lucchino.
Okay.
I understand where you're coming from, and I think a lot of fans would echo your sentiment. So, I get it. And I really don't have, necessarily a pushback or a counter argument per se. Uh-huh. It's more that I just don't have interest. I'm disinterested on what the headlines on ESPN.com are. I'll pull back the curtain here. Let me look up real quick. I have a show document that I open every single morning that consists of, I think, 75 websites, somewhere around there, give or take a few. ESPN.com is one of them. But if nothing catches my attention from the headlines, I just hit the X. I don't pay it any mind. It's not worth my thought if there's nothing that I don't like on it. I understand, you know, fans want to have – they want to see the news on Renell Blanco today. There are so many places you can go to find Renell Blanco news. You can go to Houston Chronicle. You can go to cron.com, and sometimes there are sensationalized headlines. You can go to Twitter. You can go to astros.com. You can go to The Athletic. There's so many places you can find Astro content that it doesn't necessarily move my needle. It's just, for me, it just does not matter. It's nothing burger.
To me, it's just disrespectful from the simple standpoint of if you're gonna celebrate other teams and most other teams in Major League Baseball. And I think the other frustration is, I think we'd all like to, having won a second championship, we'd all like to move on from 17 and believe that, hey, it's a clean slate now, or as clean as it can be, and let's just move forward. But things like this still kind of stick in my craw going, I don't get it, man. I mean, you're going to tell me that, you know, the Viking suspending a player because of like a traffic violation and these other things are going to be bigger stories than the first no-hitter in Major League Baseball. To me, it's frustrating.
Yeah, no, I get your point of view. My point of view is more, I don't know exactly the right way to phrase it. Like, it's not jaded. It's just disinterest. Like, I just don't care what ESPN has to say. I don't let other people form my opinions. So, like, ESPN.com not having it as one of their headlines, cool, I don't care. It's one of my headlines, and I only care about my opinion. I don't care about ESPN's opinion. But I'm also not one to watch those, like, debate shows. Like, I don't watch the Stephen A. Smith. I don't watch the who's the one on Fox that moved over?
Colin
Skip
Coward?
Bayless. Skip, oh, or Coward's, yeah, one of them, too. Like, yeah. I just... It's more the debate show, because Coward's not really a debate show.
He's clickbait.
Yeah, but it's not a debate show. Like, the debate shows and like, this is the way you should think. You're not
telling me how to think. Why?
Yeah. So, like, I get where you're coming from, and I get that it can come across disrespectful. I literally don't give it any time, is what I'm saying. But I think it's either my side, or I think actually, I would say it's like 70-30. I think 70% are with you. Uh-huh. I would say 30% just don't care. They'll go to Astros.com. They'll find McTaggart stuff. They'll find Chandler Rome stuff, and they'll consume their content there. 713-780-ESPN. Does it bother you that it was not on the ESPN front page, that it was third on their MLB tab? 713-780-3776. Rennell Blanco, no-hitter, again, for the Astros, more than the rest of Major League Baseball since the summer of 2022. Pretty crazy. And, oh, yeah, the offense woke up. How about that offense? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. On YouTube at ESPN Houston. Blankers is at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Busy show. People in the basketball world are talking about the Houston Rockets in good or bad way. A Fight Club bracket continues today. What's wrong with Lance's mock? We got to get to that. Cash it or trash it as well. But how about those Stroh's bats yesterday? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. It's time, basketball bettors. You got to get in on the action quickly. It's coming up. There's three more games left in college basketball. It's March Mania, and Bran, I'm here to tell you all about BetUS.com. I endorse one sportsbook and casino, and that's BetUS.com. They've been driving to the basket for over 30 years. That's over three decades. This year, BetUS has an epic three-pointer, a 125% sign-up bonus in your first three deposits. That's right. BetUS has the industry's craziest 125% sign-up bonus in your first three deposits, plus 10% gambler's insurance, and there's even more. BetUS accepts crypto and is offering a massive 200% crypto sign-up bonus. Gambler's insurance and crypto, you don't see that everywhere. March Mania basketball can get even more exciting with their live in-game betting. It's also a blast to check out their casino after the game, where you could get a 250% casino bonus. Get started by visiting BetUS.com or give them a call at 1-800-MY-BETUS to learn all about their bonuses and special offers. BetUS, where the game begins.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank. I'm Branham. We are the Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, 713-780-3776. Eric the Driver, sun shines, grass grows, and the Astros throw no-nos. Grade the rhyme is one who used to rhyme in a previous life.
I don't mind it. Kind of liked it. Not so bad, Eric the Driver.
I'm going to go a 3-6. What are you giving it?
That was
3-6.
Harsh.
I think it's not great.
I'm going to give it a 5.5.
5.5, 5.5. All right, so Blanker's a 5.5. I give it a 3-6. He says these are simply facts of life. Also, Yiner swings so much and walks so little, he'll get 3K hits. There's a cash it or trash it. Let's save that one for cash it or trash it. Will Yiner Diaz get 3,000 hits? Because that is exactly... That's exactly what cash it or trash it is all about. What?
That's a bit over the top, but okay.
I mean, we'll discuss it in cash it or trash it. But I mean, it would be like saying that Jose Altuve would get 3,000 hits in his second year. So, you know, I mean, It's definitely a hot take. It's steaming.
Yep.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that it's wrong. We'll just have to wait 15 years and then we can talk about it later. If I'm still doing radio with you for 15 years, something either went really well or something went really bad.
I mean, we might be telling Fred and AJ that little show that they did that one time that was just a flash in the pan was nothing like us.
That's disrespectful.
No, I'm saying if we do a show for 15 more years.
I'll have every single hair on my body, and I'm a hairy man, will be very, very gray. Mm. Blanco owes Abreu a Rolex. His play saved the no-hitter. Okay, maybe. Yes. The answer to that is yes. Am I being Buzzkill Branham by saying that was an overrated play?
I think it was. I think that it wasn't like it was, you know, almost out of reach and he snow-coned it or, you know, he had to, you know, knock it down or it was a quick reaction play. I thought that we know he's not as fleet of foot as you'd like reactionary-wise. He knocked it down. He made the play. So be it. I mean, I don't think that that was, you know, we always say in no-hitters there was a game saver or two. It was okay. I don't think that I was thinking about it going, woo, without that, what were we going to do?
Yeah, the like it was a good play for Abreu, but like an average defensive first baseman, I think makes that play without a problem. Abreu almost broke his wrist on that play. Like he's so unathletic and so like lacking agility. Like for an average defensive first baseman, I think that's a routine play. Quite frankly, for Abreu, yeah, decent play.
You know what else, Jeremy? Though, did you catch it? On the second replay, you could see it. He almost dropped the third out.
Yeah, they kind of like handcuffed him a little bit.
And it snow-coned, but he thankfully caught it at the very end. I think the umpire had already like rung him up because he didn't see it at first. I was like, oh my God, that wall was really close to popping out.
Yeah. Fortunately, that would have been an error, but you would have had to get one more guy.
Right.
2920, how is Abreu's missed scoop not recorded as an error or that not being a hit? I think he's referring, was it the first inning where they looked like they had the double play? It might have been the second. It was early in the game, though, where there was a run. Oh, it must have been the first inning because there was a runner on, and there wasn't a runner on except for the first and ninth inning yesterday when George Springer walked twice. So it had to have been the first inning. There was one out. I forget who the hitter was, but he hit that hard ground ball to Bregman. Bregman played it down the line, threw it to second. It's kind of on a short hop, too. Altuve picked it off the hop and then threw it over to first base, and it didn't even hit the ground. It didn't hit the dirt. It hit Abreu's glove. And he just couldn't catch it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't give an error on. You can't assume the second out of a double play, and you can't give an error with the runner at first. Now, if you throw it away and he like advances to second base, well, you give him the error because it caused the advancement to second. But there can't be an error. You can't assume the double play, so you can't give an error to Abreu on that play, and it can't be a hit because it's a fielder's choice.
Yeah.
So the runner reached on a fielder's choice; they got to put out at second. So it's not a hit and it's not an error. You can't give an error on the throwing in of a double play unless it like airmails the first baseman and the runner advances 90 feet.
Well done. Well played.
Yeah. 713-780-3776. Honest question, why is Singleton on the roster if he can't field and he can't hit and he's not some renowned leader? Maybe he is. Just kidding. surely there's a better warm body for back
well, the other
first
thing
base.
Is, who are you replacing him with?
Brandon Belt. I'm tweeting every morning that I want the
okay.
Astros to sign
Let me
Brandon
rephrase
Belt.
That. Who are you replacing him with
Brandon
that's
Belt.
Currently in the organization?
A lot of people would say Joey Loperfido. They want to give him every day at bats, though. I don't think they would do that until like the earliest June, I would guess, unless there's injury. I would say June at the earliest unless there's injury when it comes to that. 8818, not getting the recognition of the no-hitter doesn't bother me as much because they won't give us the spotlight. We always fly under the radar and always end up in the championship series. It's part of the recipe to make us so good being overlooked. So there's that. Maybe that, you know, the national guys are putting the chip on the Astros' shoulder. I don't think they care. I think that the Astros are just good, and they win baseball games because they're good. 0102, I'm not mad about the headlines. I just wrote it off as poor journalism on ESPN's part. It's like everybody who uses RBI is RBI in the plural. That or their page editor is a Dodger fan. There's a chance of that. Oh, there's a better chance he's a Yankee fan.
Yeah, a lot of East Coast guys, because a lot of times whenever they refer to anybody in studio or around the ESPN radio and TV, there's a lot of Yankee fans. Because, you know, being Bristol right near that East Coast, there's a ton of Yankees and Red Sox.
7655, it 100% bothers me. Every time you open ESPN or MLB apps, you see 100 articles about Ohtani's one for five night or how they will give the Dodgers three MVPs. Fair.
It is true.
Maybe that's why I just don't care anymore. It's because I'm used to seeing that, so I've just conditioned myself to where like I just don't even realize it. Like, I don't even look at it. As a Braves fan, this is 8064. When I heard of a no-hitter, I said, oh, that's cool. I wonder how many there will be this year. It's just not what it used to be. There is a good amount of no-hitters nowadays. Like, it does happen quite a bit, I feel like.
It's more frequent, right? It used to be a little bit more of a rarity. But at the same time, I looked back last year, I think there were five, and the first one was in August. So every year is a different entity, you know, and it happens. I think the thing that's more frequent, too, are the combined no-hitters, which were even more of a rarity. And the Astros had the one against the Yankees that was the first one in quite a while. But, yeah, I totally understand that it's not the kind of – it's lost a little luster. It's still a pretty big accomplishment.
Yeah. The offense woke up yesterday, 10 runs for the Stros. Everybody hit a home run, it seemed like. Kyle Tucker with a double-dong game. Yiner Diaz with a double-dong game. And Jeremy Pena hit his first home run since July 5th of last year. That's just what the doctor ordered. Just a little 10 spot, everybody homers. Jeremy Pena gets off the schneid. That was a lot of fun. For just even eliminating the no-hitter. Like, the no-hitter is taking the shine on a 5-home-run game and one in which Jeremy Pena homered for the first time since last summer. It was good to see the offense finally explode like that for the first time this season.
Yeah, no, look, the things that are positives right now, because you know that Yordan, you just fully expect Yordan's going to Yordan, he's going to be fine. You wanted to see Tucker get going, he did. You want to see Yiner keep rolling, and boy, did he. And Pena getting one, too, was just a more icing on the cake that, look, we were talking about, is he trying to lift the ball? Is he going to try and have power? You know, the power, obviously, he had a power outage, and it's gone away for a good portion of the last year. To have all those things happen and have them comfortably in the lead going from 5 to 10 pretty quickly too, that's just what the doctor ordered for a team that a lot of people were pointing a whole lot of fingers at and forgetting, yeah, you lost to the Yankees, but you were leading in every game, and it wasn't like you got shut out. It's just the nature of the beast that when you lose to them, and you lose the way you did, everybody's got a problem with everything, and the offense was taking, you know, a lot of blame too.
You're going to love the Astros lineup today.
Am I?
Yeah. Altuve, second base. Yordan in left field.
Yeah.
Kyle Tucker in right. Bregman at third. Yiner DHs. Abreu at first. And then Chaz in center. Pena at short. Caratini catches.
Chaz in center. I like it.
Yeah. Well, no Myers. No Myers. I mean, if Yordan's playing, either Chaz or Myers isn't.
Right.
And I'd rather Chaz play.
Me too.
Although Myers had that double off, or actually a single. I just stand corrected. He had that single off the wall. Dalton Varsho is an expert on playing the ball off the left field wall at Minute Maid Park. But, yes,
that's a good pickup for them, too.
I think it's smart whenever Yordan plays left with a ground ball pitcher like Fromber. So that's a heads-up move. I really like that Yiner, every time that he has not caught a game this season, he's DHing. That's one of the things – it's one of the questions I had with Espada. Like, are you giving Yiner the full day off whenever he needs rest from catching, or are you going to DH him? So – this is the second time that he is not caught, but it's the second time that he's DH when he is not caught, and I love that.
I love it, too. And you know, again, I'm not going to say what what we've already talked about, but when a guy's hot, I like that you know, that Joe's going to make sure he's in the lineup. And if he's not catching, but as bad as red hot as it is, find a way to put him somewhere else. Put him at the DH spot, and you got a chance to keep him hot and more pop in the lineup.
Yeah. Tonight's game's on the shin too, by the way.
Oh, that's because the Rockets are on the shin one.
That's right. Look at you. Look at you.
I kind of used to have to deal with that stuff.
713-780-ESPN. HRMP listener line 713-780-3776. There's a lot of folks around NBA circles that are talking about the Rockets. Former Big Threes talking about the Houston Rockets. Maybe the Rockets have their own Big Three. And what about entering Phase 3, taking a big swing in the offseason? Do the Rockets need to do that? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Mike Holley, U of H class of 1990, go Cougs. He's been protecting the interests of businesses for nearly 25 years. It's funny because he used to protect the Heisman Trophy winner. Now he's protecting your business. HRMP provides comprehensive human capital management services, including HR compliance, benefits administration, and payroll. HRMP will work with you to customize a plan for whatever you need. You need HR compliance. Cool. They got you. You need payroll. They got you. You need one of those things. They got you. All of it. They got you covered. There's nothing cookie cutter about HR&P. You're not reading off a menu. If you need a little help, a lot of help, anything in between, HR&P will create a plan for what you and your business needs. Their customer service is second to none. You'll never talk to a stranger on the other side of the line. You'll always be calling or emailing someone that is familiar with you and familiar with your company. I can speak to that customer service. We use HR&P here, of course, at Gal Media. Anytime I have a question, I'm more of an email guy. I always get a quick response, very easy to understand, and I go on with my way. Let HR&P take on the demands of human resources and eliminate your HR burdens so you can get back to growing your business. Give them a call at 281-880-6525 and let HR&P customize a plan for you. 281-880-6525 or check them out at HRP.net. That's HRP.net.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. We are the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So, Rockets play a big one today on Shin 1. There's two. Shin 1, Rockets. Shin 2, Astros. How do you think the Astros feel about that?
There's three if you count Shin Goon.
Oh, gosh.
I'm just
great
saying.
Great joke. 713-780-3776. I'm going to give that one a .2.
I like it.
Get a shot off. Austin, do you care to opine on what you thought of Blanker's Shin Goon joke?
I'll say 3.5.
He's trying to get Austin, the job. What are you
doing? Trying to get the job. That's too high. He's trying to get the job. 713-780-3776. What did you think of Blanker's Shin Goon joke? Do you think the Astros are ticked off whenever they go on Shin 2 instead of the Rockets?
Jeremy, speaking from experience, though it's different management in certain places now, that was a massive deal.
I bet.
Tad Brown always thought, like, Tad Brown would fight for the Rockets being more important when the Astros Astros opening day. And we were trying to explain to him, like, I understand the rest of the series, depending on who you're playing, but if the Rockets are trying to push for the playoffs. But, like, every single time he wanted the priority of the A-Channel, and it was like, you've got to give and take. You can't just continually take, especially in years when you're not what you used to be. I used to have to get in the middle of those, and they were not fun.
Yeah, I can imagine there's a lot of drama that goes on there. But, yeah, Rockets on Shin 1, Astros on Shin 2, and then there's Shin Goon. Grade the joke.
Thank you. You're welcome. And good night.
3776. Key from L.A. said 5.5.
What a boy, Key.
What a
boy.
0002, whatever happened to that pitcher that had his perfect game ruined by the ump? I think he was truly affected negatively by the umpire later apologized. Kind of wish it was Angel Hernandez. It was Jim Joyce was the umpire.
Yes.
Pitcher was Galarraga.
Galarraga, I want to say. Yep.
I can't remember his first name. I want to say Armando, but it definitely wasn't him. He was the first baseman. I can't remember Galarraga's first name. But, yeah, it was Galarraga. Jim Joyce was the umpire.
Was it not a perfect game?
He said, yeah, it was a perfect game.
Yep.
And then 0002 said, and I'll holler. So it was great to have Larry and Stafford, foe Larry and Stafford, texting into the show. I think he had a normal career, but he was never a great pitcher, I remember. He was just kind of solid.
Yeah.
But, I mean, even before that, I think he was like a solid guy. He was a solid pitcher who threw a perfect game and then was a solid pitcher for a couple more years. I don't think it ruined his career.
Armando Galarraga.
It was Armando?
Yeah, Armando Galarraga, 13 years ago, June 2nd, 2010.
Armando Galarraga was the first baseman, too, though, right?
No, that was
Andres Galarraga?
Andres Galarraga, I believe.
I got my Galarragas confused.
I used to love Harry Carey saying Galarraga.
Andres Galarraga was the first baseman. I liked his third baseman, Vinny Castilla. Vinny Castilla had great hair. All right.
Vinny on the left side of the Colorado infield, and you had home runs galore in the altitude.
Yeah, no doubt. You had Galarraga. You had Castilla. You had Bichette. You had Ellis Burks. You had Larry
Who
Walker.
Was the shortstop that got out of there, played for the Blue Jays, and just
You're
never...
You're thinking Tulowitzki, but he wasn't on those teams, I don't think. I think he was a little after that. Tulowitzki was after that.
I want to say their left side was, like, loaded with altitude power, and then when they... Because Vinny played here for a year or two.
Vinny did, yeah.
Yeah. They were never the same when they got out of the altitude.
Go figure. Look at Todd Helton.
Todd Helton. I know. I was there with you.
Todd Helton's bust is going to be Coors Field. All right, anyways, do the Rockets need to get on to phase three? Do they need to make a big splash in the offseason? Played a couple of cuts here. One was from Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce. They talked about potentially trading Alpi and kind of disagreeing with it.
Stepping up right now, Pete.
He might have been holding them back.
Man, he was holding them up. What you mean? He was one of their top, if not their best player, bro. You can't say that. Can't say that.
I get it. The numbers say that.
So let me say this. When one thing, when you lose a weapon, you got to, you really have no choice but to switch it up and go to something else because you don't have that no more, right? When you can make this adjustment and then still thrive, that's what I'm saying. He wasn't holding it up. He was the anchor. He out now. Now they're playing a whole nother way now because they got to.
This might be the way they need to play.
Okay, say that.
Thoughts?
I mean, I disagree with Paul Pierce wholeheartedly. I think that there's a different way to get to phase three, but I don't think trading Alpi Şengün is the answer. You and I have talked about this on multiple occasions where I think that the onus goes on to your head coach. If you're truly a good coach and you know that you have a really good and talented low post player that also can pass well, and you've got a really good up and coming open court player like Jalen that can also, he's learning to facilitate, there's a way that you can run the offense either two different ways or create an offense that actually takes advantage of the strengths of both players. I don't think because it's two different styles in the way they get it done that you can truly say we got to keep one and get rid of the other, and that's just cut and dried the way it has to be.
No, I think we get trade happy in sports where it's like, yeah, let's move this guy. Let's move this guy. And I think part of it's because it's like fun to talk about. It's fun to like, oh, think of the possibilities and all that stuff. Why would you break this up right now? Like, what's the urgency to break up Jalen Green and Alpi Şengün? Well, the winning streak. Well, Alpi Şengün was part of the winning streak early. Alpi Şengün is a good offensive player. I think Jalen Green, like, there are some correlations, I think, to Jalen Green going off offensively. A little bit more space. Alpi takes up space down low, so he kind of takes up some of the Jalen Green areas where he can attack. But Alpi can play outside, too. Alpi can develop that three-point shot. So, to me, it's silly that there's any sort of urgency. To me, I notice him more on the defensive end because Alpi can be a defensive liability. Uh-huh. Whenever he's not on the floor, you're a better defensive team.
But you know what, Jeremy, to your point, too, because it is with the trade tracker and all the different ways people love the hot stove talk.
Yep.
The biggest thing is you don't trade to trade. You trade to upgrade. And if you can't upgrade, then why are you trading in the first place? I mean, if you want to trade one of these guys, and obviously for the sake of the conversation, it's Alpi, you damn well better be able to get back at least as good, if not better, in return and also facilitate what you want to do if you're changing the offense. I don't know that you're going to get back in return for Alpi better than what you have in Alpi.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, it's your job as a general manager to look at all options, but he's certainly not a guy that I'm like, hey, I got to trade this guy. I got to get rid of this guy because, you know, it helps Jalen Green. No. Like, if you get a better return, okay, let's talk about it. But that's the job of a general manager. I think a general manager should have all of those conversations, even if he has zero desire to trade a player. Here was ESPN's Tim McMahon, respected fella around basketball circles, talked about the Rockets needing to go to a phase three.
I'll just tell you this. When we talk about vultures circling, some of those vultures have Rockets gear on because they absolutely want to take a big, big swing in the trade market sooner than later. And they've got a ton of young talent on this roster, obviously. You know, I don't know if both Şengün and Green are going to be here long term. My guess, and I emphasize guess, is that one or the other would end up getting moved at some point for them when they take their big swing. But they have unprotected Brooklyn picks this year and in 26 and an unprotected swap next year. They've got that as the draft capital ammo and then a lot of, you know, intriguing young talent on the roster. If there are stars that emerge on the trade market, I believe the Rockets are going to take swings.
Well,
and they have enough to take one big swing.
Thoughts?
I'm listening. Again, it all comes down to if you can upgrade your team. If what you're giving up gives you something better in return, whether that be a more veteran-like superstar or a player that fits a deficit that you might have or gives you a more convincing option than what you currently have on your roster – then I'm entertaining that. You know, I'm listening. Like you said, no stone should be left unturned, no pun intended. No stone should be left unturned here when you start talking about listening to every call, making calls to find out if guys are available or what might be an option for a team, and then seeing if anything, you know, kind of gets some tread on the tires, and maybe you can have further discussions. You have a ton of young talent. You know that you're only going to have Van Vliet and Dylan Brooks for a couple of years. You know that Brooks, in particular, and both contracts, can be used as trade chips if you are truly trying to acquire a big, big, big swing. So this is, especially because of where this team came from to where it is currently, this offseason, you should be having discussions daily just to find out what your options are.
Yeah, the Rockets are positioned, I mean, better than anybody, except maybe OKC. Oakley,
OKC is the one I
like,
would.
OKC and Houston, like, better than anybody when it comes to making a huge splash. Because the Rockets have the young players we talked about, Jalen Alpe. Even if it's not one of those guys, it's Jabari, Tarsi. I don't think Amin really. Cam, another one. Then you have all of the picks coming up from Brooklyn, whether it's first-rounders or whether it's pick swaps. And then you have big contracts that make it easier to make the trade because you gotta make it fit. You mentioned Dylan Brooks. Fred VanVleet's another guy. Heck, Jock Landale's books are $8 million. Yeah. Like, he could be
Jayshon Tate.
So they have incredible flexibility. They have incredible assets, and they have picks that teams are going to want. But like you said, it comes down to who the player is. Like,
here's the other thing to take into consideration, though, Jeremy, that we're not talking about. And that is, you have an owner hell-bent on winning, and you now have a head coach that sooner rather than later would like to be in a position to win more consistently. And that's a scary thing if you're Rafael Stone to have to deal with, because even if you believe differently, the guy who signs the checks has made no secret of the fact that he wanted to take it to phase two this year and then take it beyond that. He wants to win. And you know that from everything that we've heard, at least we don't know for sure, but from what we've heard was that right before the deadline, Udoka was more hell-bent on getting some more veterans in here so that they can win sooner rather than later. So that's going to be interesting to see when they start weighing what's on the table for them.
I'm more actions than words, though. Like, words get thrown out super easy, like on these rumor mills and Twitter and social media. Like, it's very easy to start a rumor. Like, the whole Bridges thing with Brooklyn. And you had some people that you had Shams that was, like, backing that up. And then you had Tim McMahon, I think it was, that said no. Like, they called Brooklyn, but they never even, like, exchanged names. They said, is Bridges available? And they said no. And they're like, okay, talk to you later. So, like, they never even exchanged names. So I hesitate when it comes to reports. Like, you have to have a healthy skepticism.
It's all with a grain of salt because guys are still trying to get clicks too.
You have to have a healthy skepticism, I think, when it comes to looking at that stuff. I'm more of an actions, and I like everything the Rockets have done this year. I don't think have really been like, we have to win and we have to win right now. I think the first thing that people would point to counter that thought, well, you signed Dylan Brooks, you signed Fred VanVleet. Well, they had to hit a salary floor.
Yeah, you had to spend money.
Like, you had to hit the salary floor. And those guys, I think, were brought in to, you know, try to win more games, but also to develop the young players. But they didn't trade any of the young guys in the offseason. They didn't trade any of the young guys at the trade deadline. They didn't make any sort of, like, win-now moves. So their actions have kind of been the opposite of that narrative that's existed that's been out there, I think.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think that regardless if they were tempted or not, regardless of what the direction that had been discussed internally was there or not, the fact that they didn't do something should be as pleasing to a Rockets fan as anything that they're doing on the court right now, because you've seen the development. We've seen Amen Thompson take a massive step in year one that early in the season you weren't sure you were going to see for a couple years. You know, and don't think for a second that there are general managers out there the same way Tim McMahon put it, but from the other perspective, kind of like vultures flying out, circling, going, we see Amen, we see Cam, we see Tari Eason, we see guys that are, you know, that are ripe for the taking, possibly, if we want to unload or go a different direction, and those young players we could build around. So there's going to be mutual interest in this offseason. It should be very interesting to see, you know, how, if anything develops.
Yeah, the big names, though, it's going to take, to me, a star. I find it hard to believe that Jalen or Alpe will be traded. I find it hard to believe Amin will be traded. It would take a really special name for that to be the case, I think. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. And since we're on the conversation, we do this at the beginning of every month. Who are the top Rockets that we're building around? Who are the top Rockets you're building around? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
All aboard!
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Who you build around if you're the Rockets? In order, 713-780-ESPN. HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So we've been taking the average of these. I don't think that Brian labeled these right. But if you go all the way back to November, what are you laughing at?
The reaction that comment got?
You see Brian?
I do.
No.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Uh-oh, look out him, now.
I don't think he did. Anyways, in November, we took the average. It was Jalen, Alpi, Jabari. Maybe one of the reasons he's no longer with us. December, we had Alpi, Jabari, Jalen. We're taking the average of all three of us. Joe at first, Brian lately, and maybe Austin in April. January, we had Alpi, Jalen, Jabari. February, we had Alpi, Cam, Jalen, Jabari, Amin. It's funny, Cam got all the way to two. Mm-hmm. And then March, okay, I see what happened here. Hey, we have Jalen 1, Alpi 2. That is correct. We had Jalen 1, Alpi 2. I saw the stuff at the bottom. I think he messed up at the bottom here. Anyways, who – or I'm just not reading it right. It could be that. It could be a user error. I'm an idiot. So March we had Jalen and Alpi. Now we're here through the beginning of April. Who are you building around? What order? Who's at the top? And then rank them until you want to stop.
I'm going to put the easy choice, which is I'm still going to put Alpi 1. I'm gonna put Jalen now 2. I'm gonna put.
Didn't you have Alpi 1 last week, or didn't you have Jalen 1 last month?
I don't think so. I think I still had Alpi, but I let Jalen be 2.
I thought you had him 1.
No, I think that the sway vote was Joe or whoever or Brian.
I just don't understand.
I just think Alpi's been their best player all year consistently. I'll put Alpi 1, but Jalen showed me enough now that I believe that he is the clear cut 2. Now 3 to me is interesting because of the fact that. I think Amen Thompson has shown a higher ceiling than Jabari, but you also can't turn and look the other way at the fact that Jabari gets you double doubles. He does a lot of things that help a team win. So I'm going to, for the sake of the conversation in order, I would say I'll go Alpi, Jalen, Jabari, Amen, and then Cam.
Okay. Notari?
No, because he's been hurt all year. I got to make sure he comes back from that injury. I understand that there have been teams that, you know, also have shown interest that he has value. I get that. But I got to make sure he's okay. That leg thing was very, very mysterious, very weird. And then they did a surgical procedure to hopefully fix it. So I got to see him next year before I change that.
I'm struggling with who I want 2 and who I want 3. I'm going to have Jalen 1. Jalen jumps. I think I had Jalen 1 last month, but maybe not. I'm going to put Jalen 1 this month. I have Jalen at the very top for me. So Jalen Green's the number one guy that I'm building around. That does not mean that I'm trading Alpi Şengün because I think that they can coexist. I'm struggling here between Amin and Alpi. I think both of them have one severe flaw to their game. Like Amin Thompson's flaw is shooting. There's no doubt about that, but he can still get you 20. Get him to the dunk spot, create an opening, have Jalen find him, and he go down and throw down a jam.
Wait, you had Jalen 1, Jabari 2?
I haven't decided between okay. Amin and Alpi.
Oh, gotcha.
I'm trying to decide between Amin and Alpi in 2 and 3. Those are going to be my 2 and 3. Jabari's my 4, and Cam is my 5. I'm trying to decide between Amin and Alpi as my number 2. Amin has trouble shooting the basketball. Mm-hmm. Alpi has trouble defending the basketball. So they're both kind of flawed in a way. You can try to hide Alpi, but at the same time, like you're hiding him. You're trying to – these pick and rolls can kind of put him in a tough spot. You can kind of – force them into some bad matchups, or even if you're trying to give them to, you know, stick on one individual defender, it opens up some other stuff. So that kind of, it doesn't bother me, but I don't love that. I wish he was a good defender. But Amin Thompson's a freak. Like, Amin Thompson's so uniquely skilled that he's a really fun basketball player. He can defend as good as anybody. He can defend 1 through 5. I'm not sure if he's a point guard. I'm not sure if he's a power forward. I have no idea because he's so unique.
Yeah, I'm not sure it matters. He's just a box stuffer.
Yeah, he can. He just fills out the stat sheet.
Yep.
I can't do it yet. I'm not going to do it yet. I don't want to be too much prisoner of the moment because Alpi's been off the floor. I'm struggling with 2, but I'm going to keep Alpi at 2. I'm going to have Amin at 3, Jabari at 4, and Cam Whitmore at 5. Why do I have him in closer to 2 than you do, Blankers?
Well, no, it was the conversation. Well, because I think it's clear cut that your two best players and what you've seen total in totality for me, no matter what Alpi has shortcomings wise on defense, he's improved. And he understands a little bit more about rotations. And I think more so than anything else, he understands his shortcomings, things he can't do, no matter what he tries to do. But I think that at least he's made an improvement defensively. But what he's done offensively, both with scoring and facilitating, has me putting him 2. But where I really struggled is, do I take what I already know, which is Jabari is steady and that's what he's going to give you, over what I think you can see a player grow into, and that's looking at what Amen has already shown us and going, it's not out of the realm of possibilities that the shot can improve. It's not out of the realm that in a couple of years, he really does have a spot-up offensive game. And if he adds that to what we've already seen, he can take his ceiling a notch above where we've seen Jabari go. So I struggled more at 3, going between what you pretty much have seen is what it is and what could be with Amen. So my biggest thing was I could easily have put Amen at 3.
Yeah, I could. I almost got him. Almost got him all the way up to 2. I love this core. Like I love this core. Like I want to see another year of this core. I would be very, very patient in terms of let's trade a big name for a big name, because I like this core a lot. Like if you the whole Bridges deal, I don't think the Bridges stuff was true at all.
But I hope not.
I mean, it depends on who you believe. Like Jim McMahon said that it didn't. That's not at all how it happened. He said that the Rockets called Brooklyn, asked about the availability of Bridges. They said we're not interested in trading them, and that was the end of the conversation.
I talked to a couple other guys that said that it happened. Now, but again, I don't think that's anything that should be a negative on either side. This is what we were just talking about in this offseason. You're paid to have conversations.
Right, but if you're throwing out an offer for Jalen Green for Bridges, I think that you can't look at that in a negative light. Like that's an issue that
if it's an offer. But if it's just, hey, what are the pieces we're talking about, and you're kicking around and you're, okay, take this guy out of the deal, he's off the table, whatever. The conversation can happen. If it got to offer stage, then it's different.
Yeah, we would have to hear the conversation.
Right.
We'd have to hear the conversation. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Who are you building around? 713-780-3776. It's funny how much we've changed throughout the year. Like November, it was Jalen. December, it was Alpi. Jabari was up to 2 in December. Jalen fell to 3. January, it was Alpi Jalen. February, it was Alpi Cam. Cam got up to 2.
Well, he was
hot.
How
did we let that happen?
Because at that point, he was instant offense, no matter how bad his shot selection might be and his neglect in passing the ball to others. He was coming in and getting 14 points in 14 minutes and also getting rebounds and a couple of other assistant things. And you're like, oh, boy, he's got some talent. And plus, the other guys weren't playing so great.
It's just crazy to think that at one point in the season, now I know it was going on. I know that it happened. I'm not ignorant to it.
Yep.
That people were more Cam than Jalen Green. It shows you how much things can change and how quickly things can change. 713-780-ESPN. Time for the Fight Club bracket. Killer Bee Fight Club tournament. Who advanced in yesterday's 2 matchups? And who will advance today in the final 2 spots in the Elite Eight? Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.